Welcome back to Three Black Dots with Dr. Tiffany, Dr. Karen, and Dr. Zanetta.
Apparently there were reports of jellyfish at the beach. So there was a little kid who gotten stung by jellyfish. And then Ashley and I were freaking out because there were little crabs that were the little ghost crabs that were on the ground. They were oh my goodness, they were everywhere. They looked like spiders. So yeah, that was really a challenge to be on the beach. I loved the sand though, because I love soft sand. You know, that's why I used to love Jones Beach on Long Island versus Robert Moses. Robert Moses had more rocky kind of sand, you know, so it wasn't really comfortable. But this is like soft, beautiful sand in North Carolina, and then you got these insects crawling around.
We used to take boys out at night with flashlights to look for ghost crabs.
Well, that's what was happening at night. The families were doing that, and they were some of them were picking them up. Some people were actually fishing with the crabs. So that was
you're cool. Like, nah, I ain't got to do that.
No, maybe if I was younger, maybe I just was like, you know, I'm not touching any of that.
You're not trying to hang out with the crabs. I understand.
And can I tell you? All right, so here I must have. So I was having issues while I was away. Ash and I found these rocking chairs. So you go out onto the pier, right? And people are out there fishing. This was at night. People are out there fishing because you can fish all night long, right? So people are out there fishing, whatever. And these two little black boys who are out there fishing. This guy, one little kid had an amazing cast, and he was casting and whatever. And he had shrimp, and he was using squid as his bait. But he kept getting closer to me and Ashley. And Ashley and I had found these two rocking chairs, and we were sitting there just chilling. Beautiful night. Beautiful. And we were sitting there chilling. He kept getting closer. And I'm like, I just don't want to get hooked. You know, like, I don't want to get a hook in my skin. So I was like, Ash, let's move to the other side. You know, because he kept forgetting. It was like his rod was in her eye. And I was like, wait, honey. You know, wait a minute. And I said, well, let's go on the other side. So we don't get in his space. So we moved the rocking chairs over. And I'm sitting there. And I'm like, Ash, are you feeling... I feel like the deck is moving. Do you feel like the deck is moving? She's like, no, Ma, the pier is not moving, Ma. And I'm like, no, really? I just feel like it's moving. Next thing I know, I'm turning sideways in the rocking chair, and I'm going down.
It was slow motion.
It was slow motion. It was like,
I'm going down.
And where were you? What happened?
Stuck in the rocking chair. The rocking chair was stuck to my butt. I couldn't get off. And I'm on the ground, and I'm like laying sideways. And Ash's like, Ma, what's going on? Turns out the rocking chair was broken, but somebody had left it there. And so when I moved it, I must have jiggled it loose. And so there were two parts that was broken, the rocking thing and a girl. So now I have a giant bruise across my foot. I didn't even know the bottom of my foot could bruise like this. But I had gotten hooked. So I was wearing this cute white dress, and my dress had gotten hooked. The reason why I couldn't get out is because my dress was caught on a nail that was poking out. I was like, oh my God. So I was like, all I could do was crack up and laugh, because of course I'm thinking I'm cute because I had this cute white dress on. I'm like falling over in a rocking chair
and ripping your dress.
Fortunately, I didn't rip the dress. Ashley was able to unhook me without ripping the dress. But it was so funny. And there was a lady standing. Are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I thought it was funny. Couldn't believe
it. Talk about where's a camera when you need it.
Oh, man.
Exactly.
And
I was like, how can you? Because I was like, I kept asking her. She's like, why do you keep asking me if the pier is moving? And it was moving because my chair was breaking.
Oh, it was moving. It was moving. Oh, that's funny.
Yep. It was hysterical. Oh, I was like, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy.
That's funny.
We went and saw the horses, so that was cool.
Oh, the wild horses. Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. So we drove up to Corolla, or what do you call it? Carla? He didn't call it Corolla. He called it Corolla, I think. I don't know.
Right.
That sounds wrong. We went up there and saw that, which was cool. But you know, the Jeeps, like, you really need a four-wheel drive because they go out in the sand, and the sand dunes are crazy, but it was really awesome. Went out there. And we just kind of, it was just nice to just get away. I just needed to get away, but it was hard because the people next to me were smoking.
No,
big signs.
No, they can't do that. They can't
big
do that.
Big sign that says, do not smoke.
Not there.
And people not wearing their masks, kind of like you're talking about the whole COVID. I know people are getting fatigued from it, but put the dang mask on. Like, put it on. And especially in elevators, I'm telling you, it is
They didn't have it on in the elevator?
No elevators. No.
Mm-mm. And I mean, at first, I'm just like, okay, do I get out?
Do you get out? You get out. You don't have time for that.
These people. I had my mask on, but I was just like, and then the guy's like, ha 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 ha.
Oh, no. I'm like,
was he laughing like that, Karen?
He wasn't.
It probably was the one by you smoking.
It probably was. But it is weird. Like, I feel everything is exacerbated with COVID, right? So when somebody's talking, I'm like, ooh, are they spitting when they talk? You know, like, mm-hmm, if they're not wearing a mask. I'm just seeing it all. I'm seeing the spray. I'm hearing the in their voice, like the, oh, just, it's freaking me out. Freaking me out.
Yeah, I had someone ask me if they could take their mask off in clinic. And I must have made a face. And they were like, oh, I didn't mean to scare you. Nope.
Yeah. So they're still not testing you, Hazi?
Mm-mm.
Even though you had an exposure, they didn't test you?
No. Do you know how hard it is to get tested in Florida?
It's probably about as hard as it is to get tested in North Carolina.
It probably is about as hard. You have to go to the CVS and make an appointment. Mm-hmm. That's about the best you can do.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. We do the antibody test, but I mean, really, we just don't have the test. Mm. They're just not here.
What about for the inpatients? Like,
inpatients? Yeah, the inpatients you can. Okay. Yeah, and you know, the inpatients is not a problem, but I mean, you gotta make it in.
So, yeah, that's really unfortunate.
That's terrible.
I really do feel like we just need a whole reset. Can we just reset the country for a minute? Just a reset, like press a button.
And schools.
Like, we need a public health system.
You know,
tell me what you mean by that.
Say again. I didn't hear you.
I said, tell me what you mean by that.
That we need a public health system? Well, clearly we don't have one. I mean.
But tell me what you mean by that.
I mean, we need something where everyone has the same shot at health. You know, what has really, I kind of sit in disbelief is this notion of, like, not only does just every state decide what they want to do as if a virus doesn't, like, cross a border or something, but then it gets down to, like, within the state, every city decides, you know, what they want to do. And now you have these battles between governors, like, you know, the governor of Georgia who's suing the mayor of Atlanta now,
right,
for putting in a mask ordinance. And it's like, this is nuts how fractured everything is and how your level of protection is solely dependent on where you are in the country, in a state, in a city. Like, maybe you're in a state that mandated masks. Maybe you're not. You know? And it's like, huh? And so, again, it's just this idea of, like, the way that you, your risks in this pandemic are so dependent on just, like, where you are and who your local decision makers are. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem right. And this is taking off the doctor hat. This is taking off the public health degree hat, all of those hats. Like, just at the very basic thing. How is that right? How is it okay that if you live in one state, and people decide that it's not their problem if you have a chronic condition, so you should have to stay home and they shouldn't have to wear a mask. And if you're in X state, that's okay. But in another state, everyone has to wear a mask and you have some more protection. That's what I mean when I say we need a public health system.
I don't think any place in the United States is safe. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think COVID has really removed the wool from everyone's eyes. I think we all knew how fractured healthcare was.
It's so fractured.
I mean, but we can't even pretend. Like, at this point, mm-hmm. we can't even pretend that we have inequality. And the recommendations, I'm sorry, coming out of the CDC.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember when I was younger. And I remember I heard of people who would, like, go to work for the CDC. And that, to me, was like working at NASA.
Yeah. Yes.
I was like, yes. Wow, CDC. And, I mean, I don't think they'll ever get their reputation back. The Surgeon General, bless him. Bless him.
Bless his heart.
Bless him.
But is this just an issue in a pandemic, or is this an issue across the board?
It's across the board.
Across the board.
Right.
Across the board. But the pandemic is exposing and really highlighting that, right? People made the assumption that, you know, oh, this is the same way we can talk about disparities. Oh, those Black people, they're just not compliant.
Right.
Right.
Nothing about that.
It's because they're buying chips and sodas.
System. Right, exactly, right? So the assumption is that they're doing bad things to make their health poor. No, the system is stacked against them. They don't have the capacity to enter into the healthcare system in the same way that others do. And that is solely dependent on your zip code. And we know this. Mm-hmm. We've known this because we are in this space, because we've studied disparities, despite the fact that we had people saying, can't you study something else? No, this is really what I want to do my research in, right?
Right. Yeah.
To go full swing back to what you were saying.
Yeah.
But it's really important to recognize that these issues have been longstanding. Mm-hmm. They are just now being highlighted because a virus, which does not discriminate, is blowing a hole into the entire healthcare system. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, Black, white, Puerto Rican, if you are poor. If you live in a rural community, you have this much higher risk because of all the other things, those social determinants of health that we talked about on the live when we were talking mm-hmm. with our colleagues a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, now they're all the data coming out, obesity being a huge risk factor for death from COVID, diabetes, hypertension, all of those things that we know plague those chronic conditions that plague the communities who do not have access to health care.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. So, Karen, break it down, because you mentioned we did a live, right, with the Fertile Ground Food Co-op. It was great. They said they want to have us back. I hope they do. But we had a really good discussion, I thought, about this issue, this social determinants of health. But, like, what does that mean? So break it down. Take obesity. Just take the problem of obesity and explain what. If you're looking at obesity and you're looking at it as what are the social determinants of health around having obesity, and go.
Oh, child, we could talk about this for a long time.
Okay, yeah, I know I'm going to see the sunrise in the morning.
Because we throw that phrase around a lot, I think.
A lot.
More people are doing it, you know, but like what it take obesity, break it down. What do you mean?
Okay. Let's break it down. So let's first define social determinants as the conditions in which people are born. Okay. Live, learn, and work. Okay. So the reason why obesity, I put born in there, it's really important because it goes back to a while back we talked about epigenetics. We talked about this phenomenon that happens where while our DNA across races may, in fact, there may be less variability in the actual DNA, the genetic material that gets passed on from one generation to the next, In Black individuals, there are modifications to that DNA that prevent it from being expressed or cause it to be overexpressed, and that's epigenetics. Those are the modifications that happen to the DNA that impact how that DNA is expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the traumas that Blacks in particular, and I'm going to use Blacks because that we know obesity is a humongous risk factor. We talked about, 70% of Blacks in the United States are obese, mm-hmm. or overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that starts with trauma. There are data to show that epigenetic modifications of the DNA in a smoker, and I use this example all the time in my talks, there is clear data that shows if I am a woman and I am a smoker and I have my eggs that are there and I'm smoking, and I become pregnant, the next generation, my child, my progeny, particularly if it's a woman, is going to be more obese than I was. And if that next progeny, my daughter, who does not smoke, but then gets pregnant and then has a child, her child will be even more obese. That's epigenetics. That means mm-hmm. that there are changes that can happen, modifications that can happen to the DNA and how that DNA is expressed that get passed on from one generation to the next that then can create a problem such as obesity. So there mm-hmm. might not be an obesity gene per se, but there may be things that get switched on and off that can mm-hmm. indeed impact, you know, our body's ability to process foods. Right. Or, you know, we know there's a lot of crap that we eat. We have no clue where it comes from because we're not farming or anything like that right. ourselves for the most part. There are right. some people that do, like Tiffany. Dr. Tiffany is right. farming. She's farmer a farmer.
Tiff. Farmer Tiff. I think farmer is that is an ambitious term to use.
Gardener Tiff.
Yes. That's okay. You're a garden and you have your own right. stuff. And so because we don't quite know what chemicals are being put into the foods, we don't know how different individuals are going to process. So that's why I want to put born in there, because
yeah.
we know that the trauma that has happened in the Black community absolutely impacts those epigenetic changes that can then predispose the next yep. generation for obesity, et cetera. So that's why I want to put that in there. Now let's talk about where we live. We mm-hmm. talk about zip code being important. And it's important because the zip code and where we live really determines what resources are there. Whether it determines right. whether or not we have fresh food, fresh fruits and vegetables that are at our disposal, or do we have to go to the corner store to get our foods, or do we have to take two buses and a train to get our food and maybe go to a grocery store that the first thing when you walk in, you see drink. I can't even call it beverage because it's literally just colored drink, right? That's mostly sugar. You know those big jugs? You know what I'm talking about? Those gallon jugs
yeah.
of drink.
Red strawberry.
Red. It's not even strawberry. It's just red. It's red. Red. Got a flavor. It says red with sugar in it.
And back in the day when drink. I used to go to Popeyes, that's what I would get a red.
Oh, strawberry? Get that strawberry from Popeyes? Great. I still, when I go, yeah.
Oh, my stomach can't handle Popeyes anymore. Lord, edit that out. I can't say that as a self-respecting New Orleanian, but it can't. Except for Mardi Gras, when anything goes. Go ahead, Karen.
Wow.
We got distracted, and this is why epigenetic. Wait, this is
continue.
We're back.
No, but that's all important because it's the fast foods. It's cheaper sometimes for families to go to McDonald's. Or to go to Wendy's, I'll use Wendy's because I go to Wendy's all the time, where they get a 4x4, right? You get four items for $4. Mm-hmm. So cheaper to do that than to find your way to a grocery store. Yes, girl, gotta have the frosting. To find your way to a grocery store to get fresh fruits and vegetables, right? Or does your apartment even have a working stove in it, which I'm finding is fascinating. There are some communities, even in Philadelphia, where there were some communities that didn't have working plumbing in their houses,
right?
And this is recent times. We're not talking about in the 1800s. We're talking about now, where there are families who don't have working, you know, plumbing in their homes. So where you live matters, where you work matters. And so these mm-hmm. social determinants of health absolutely impact, you know, obesity because, you know, what foods you're eating. Do you have the capacity to walk in your neighborhood? Are kids able to go out and play safely? Are there playgrounds, or are the playgrounds overrun? Or are they the old metal things and not the soft, cushy things? You know, y'all know because you guys live in them neighborhoods where they have these fabulous, mm-hmm. you know, jungle gyms. And they have that soft cushiony material that's out there, you know, so the babies mm-hmm. don't hurt themselves too hard, mm-hmm. you know, when they fall. Mm-hmm. There are some communities where that's not the case, and everything is metal and concrete and overgrown because nobody's taking care of it. Those are the conditions, those social determinants of health absolutely impact obesity and obesity rates. And if you're working 2 and 3 jobs and don't have the capacity to eat right, I mean, I think, Dr. Z, you were the one who had talked about that last time or a couple of times ago where people may have 2 or 3 jobs. They don't even have time to cook, you know, that they're trying to grab something in between. And so, you know, of course you're going to eat the things that are high fat content or high caloric content. And that actually exacerbates the obesity problem.
So, which underpins a lot of the chronic conditions, cancer included, as we talked about. So what, as a physician, what is our responsibility to acknowledge this and start to address it? Because here's how it plays out. You know, you see a patient, I see a patient, he sees a patient, they're overweight, obese, BMI is whatever, 40, you know, and you're like, okay, you need to lose weight. Bye. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how it is. In that, for us, we're seeing you for something else. And it's like, oh, and by the way, you need to lose weight. And that's kind of the end of it without any real guidance. Mm-hmm. But also acknowledging what you're saying, that this is a problem that extends to where people live, the neighborhoods, the zip code, what. So what is our responsibility as a physician to start to address this? And now at this time in history where a spotlight is on this, you know, as we talked about with COVID, where we're seeing how all of this impacts health, what do we do with it?
Well, I think we do exactly what we're doing now. I mean, first, you really need to be aware of the problem. So, you know, I really liked Karen talking about the epigenetic part of this, because I mean, one, you know, realizing that some small behaviors can affect generations. Like, this is not just you. This is an entire legacy that's important. And so, you know, while at this very moment, I can't affect policy at this very moment. I can participate in things and hope over the long term, you know, I can help. I can be a writer or something for Karen's policy initiatives.
Yes.
But I think this, to me, is the whole reason for the podcast, right? To let people know that, one, these problems exist, and there are ways to try to combat it. But I mean, it really is, I don't know that there's one thing that we can do or say to change it, except help people to understand that this is our community's, this is a problem within our community. And going to our community to let them know that this is something that we can work on together. It really is this is a long-term strategy. This is not something that will be fixed in, you know, before we have a COVID vaccine. This is something that, you know, we're talking to moms who are talking to, you know, our moms, but also impacting our kids. So one of the things that I've learned since I've been in Florida is how well people can live. I did not realize that. So, you know, people in my family, they die. And when they die, it's not like this, you know, 98-year-old, I went to sleep and, you know, with a smile on my face. It's, you know, cancer, strokes, diabetes, you know, all the chronic conditions that impact our community. And I have never really seen so many people who are over the age of 65 who are living their best life. Mm. Yep. And when Karen was talking about social determinants of health, I'm like, wow, some people, I mean, you really were set up to win, you know? And so it's easy for you to run several miles a day because, I mean, that's what you've been doing. You've always been eating a more, you know, plant-based diet or, you know, a healthier diet. And so you're setting your generations up as well. And so I think
You don't have to worry about getting shot when you're running. I'm just saying that.
You don't have to worry about getting shot when you're running. And, you know, there are lots of stressors that maybe you had, but maybe you didn't. So I think it really is up to us and our generation to do the work that needs to be done. And I think a lot of people are more open to it than they used to be. Because I think now we realize that there may not be a political savior. At least this is me talking, not talking for the community. I've given up on a political savior, right? And so now, I mean, goodness, I just got to get my life right so that I can help other people get their lives right too. So I didn't answer your question, Tiffany, but that's my truth.
To Tiffany's point, I think there, I wish there was more a population health focus versus a public health focus, right? Because that gets down to what's happening in terms of the social determinants. Because oftentimes when you look at public health, it's really saying, what are the outcomes and what can doctors do to change that versus understanding that health goes beyond what happens when somebody comes into the doctor's office and looks at it from that point. But Tiffany, your question was really important because I think physicians oftentimes feel like they are helpless, and so they don't even bother asking the questions about the social determinants of health. Whereas my view is, and I have had patients, and I might not be as direct as you and say, girl, you need to lose 50 pounds. Not to say that's what you do that, but.
I might have said that to you too.
Okay.
What are you drinking?
Like what you doing? You drinking
the lady drinking the orange Kool-Aid juice. You drinking? Right.
No, it was well, juice. We had a patient. What was she drinking? She was drinking like a jug of juice every day.
Was it some tea or something? Was it? What was she drinking,
sweet
Tiffany?
Tea, but it was as big as my head.
Sweet tea.
And I thought it was water.
Think the lady's tea.
Was tea. She had sweet tea. No, and this was an educated woman, too.
The patient in residency. I'll tell y'all about that another time. Okay. Here's a beautiful point.
But no, you can talk about that in just a minute, because all I'm saying is, those are the opportunities where we can do small teaching, right? Mm-hmm. And I have had patients where they've been just gaining weight, and they might be on hormonal therapy or something. I'm like, you know, you've gained weight. And so part of it is, are you looking, as a clinician,
right?
Are you looking at some of the parameters, at some of the things right. that we know can be harbingers of bad things to come? Are you examining your patient? And like I've said before, I have colleagues of mine who do not believe in examining their patient. I'm going to listen to your heart. I'm going to listen to your lungs. I'm going to feel your lymph nodes. I'm going to look in your mouth. There are things that I'm going to do as a clinician that I need to do each and every time because I may find something, because I may be the only doctor you're seeing. I'm an oncologist, but I may be the only doctor you're going to see that year. And if I find something, if I hear a new murmur, if I hear something funky going on in the lungs, I'm going to be like, okay, you need to go and see XYZ clinician. And that's an important component. That's something that we can do. So I also look at the vitals. And one of the vital signs is weight. And if I see that my patient has had their weight climbing up, I mean, we're talking about obesity in this particular incidence. I do say, so what's going on? You've been gaining weight. Oh, I'm taking his hormones and it's causing X, Y, and Z. So tell me what's your day look like. Tell me what your activities look like. Tell me what you're eating. And I'm okay with having those conversations. And I think more clinicians need to be okay with having those conversations. And it doesn't have to be, to Tiffany's point. Again, Tiff, you're getting a lot of love tonight.
I'll take it.
You don't have to change everything at once. It's step by step.
Right.
It's small steps. Because to the point, we've had this conversation before. I don't know, was it Ep 5, 6, where we talked about how I knew what I needed to do but couldn't do it. I didn't have the capacity to do it. Right?
Right, right.
So we don't want to overload people. We don't want to add burden to our patients. Right. And that's why understanding what those social determinants are, what are the things that are impacting their everyday life. Tell me what your day looks like. Oh, well, I go from here to here, and I've got two jobs, and I've got to take care of the kids. Oh, so you acting crazy. So who can help you? Those are conversations I have. Who can help provide some support for you?
That's pick up the kids? Key right. In cancer patients. It's so key. Who is your support system?
Particularly now, because it's more fractured than it's ever been.
Yeah, but it always has been for me. Like, when I would meet somebody, I would ask, like, who's your support?
Right. But see, and see now, the kids can't come visit. I mean, it's like, it's tough. It is.
Well, here's something that I always fought with my patients because, you know, I was used to taking care of women. And women are used to taking care of everybody else.
Right.
So it was always you're so used to taking care of everyone else that you didn't want to burden anyone, right. Ask for help for anyone, because you're supposed to be the one mm-hmm. who keeps the show going and you don't want to burden anyone, you know? And I would just say to people, you know, like, there are people in your life who want the opportunity to show you love and support, yes. and you're robbing them of that.
Right,
you're yes. not giving the people in your life a chance to support you when you need it, to love you when you need it, to let God work through them because you need support now. Like,
right.
You need to let people in. Yes. And that would happen a lot with right. women, particularly. So.
Right.
You know, the idea, Karen, that you were saying of, yeah, like who is your support when you have when you're going through a cancer diagnosis, when you're going through treatment, and then who's there afterwards, after all the dust yes. settles.
Right. Because that's when it can really be difficult.
Yeah.
Yes. And I frankly think it doesn't have to do just with cancer. I think it's with everything.
Oh, yeah. It's with everything.
So it's with yeah. whatever health. And again, because your
it's with any crisis.
Doctors do, but just when you're going to primary care, it could just be your annual physical exam. That right. every doctor needs to have these conversations with your right. patients. It doesn't take that long. It really doesn't. And what right. I'm trying to teach my residents is you can do two things at once. So I do a lot of social history while I'm examining. Right. So. I might be feeling the lymph nodes. Oh, so tell me who's home with you, right? Who lives at home with you, right? And I'm doing my exam. Or I may be saying, so tell me, you know, what are you doing, you know, in your spare time? Tell me what you do for fun or those sorts of things. But I'm doing it yeah. while I'm examining the patient so that you're doing a twofer and it allows it to be more natural versus this, okay, I'm going to take a history and first we're going to find out what all the issues are. And that we know we're limited on time. And I also right. tell my trainees, particularly in oncology, it's different when you're a primary care doctor, when you're an inpatient, you need to get a full history. Look, we already know what patients have for the most part, right, when they're coming to us. And I feel like, look, I know that you as medical oncologists oftentimes are the first folks who are seeing folks. And so you guys are doing a great history in terms of understanding the medical conditions. So particularly as a radiation oncologist, I feel a little spoiled because I can just say, okay, I'm going to verify that these details are correct. So I can actually go in and just say, here's what I know about you. Is anything, did I get anything wrong? Right. So it makes that in my capacity to look at those social determinants, I have a little bit more wiggle room than some of my other colleagues do, including you guys, because I feel like you guys do a lot of that heavy lifting up front. There are occasional times where I'll get referred to a patient directly from dermatology or from surgery, and I do that, like that full intake to make sure that everything's okay. But a lot of times you guys do that. And so it may not be the first meeting that you have with somebody that you guys can have that conversation, but it may be the next, the second, or the third. But asking those questions, regardless of what the disease is, particularly if it's a chronic condition where a clinician is going to be involved with the care of a patient in an ongoing setting, it's really important to understand what the social determinants are for that patient.
Free Black Docs is not intended as medical advice. All opinions are our own. Free Black Docs is produced by Wings Productions.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Free Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.